Welcome to Into the Garden with Leslie here on News Radio WINA, sponsored by Dos Amigos Landscaping. I'm Leslie Harris. So happy to have you join us again on this gardening show. Our plant of the week is a keystone plant, probably the very best thing you can plant on your property. How exciting is that? We'll be chatting with Doug Tallamy, an entomologist, that's a bug guy, from the University of Delaware, and he's going to help us understand more about the plant of the week and why it's so essential to our stewardship of the land and actually to our very survival. Sounds kind of heavy, doesn't it? And lastly, our playlist will include how to play in your garden this week and what might be fun for you to listen to at the same time. If you're a first-time listener, you should probably be aware that this is not particularly a native plant podcast. I kind of like all the plants myself. But the more I learn about gardening, the more I understand how essential native plants are. Like many gardeners, I started out by just wanting to grow all the pretty things, didn't matter where they were from, just the pretty ones, thank you very much. And that is actually not going to change. I'm always going to grow things that are not native to the United States or the Piedmont. But my goal is to just grow fewer and fewer of them. My understanding of gardening is evolving as my interest in the creatures that live in my garden develops. That interest is great. I mean, I've just always been one of those people who's like, oh, look at that bug and there's a snake and isn't that cool? But what I'm understanding now that it's actually a lot more important than that. My knowledge of how essential the bugs and the birds and the snakes and all that stuff are to the food web is just beginning. And I'm hoping, if you're not tracking this concept, to get you as enthused as I am to learn more. Doug Tallamy, who you're going to hear from in a couple of minutes, is the person responsible for my understanding of what is crystal clear to him and other scientists. And that is that we have to care about science and native plants if we are landowners. I'm not saying if we are gardeners, I'm just saying landowners. Even if you rent, you can have an impact. I don't garden for the sake of science, and I probably never will. That will never be my top priority. I just like the physical part. I love the ornamental and the emotional aspects and how good it makes me feel. I love all that too much. But the more I know about science, the better a gardener it's going to help me to be. And it's just going to add to my enjoyment of it. I and all of you out there who have any patch of land at all at your disposal need to know about the opportunity and indeed the responsibility to care for your piece of planet. And that has to do with native plants, and that has to do with our plant of the week. All right, I hope I haven't scared you away. If you are a native plant enthusiast, you're probably like, why is she apologizing? And I'm not apologizing, I'm just sort of explaining. Gardening is recreation, it's fun. And I just don't think it's a great idea to impose rules on people, but I do think it's very important to impose information on people. I don't want you to be consumed with guilt about having hydrangeas native to Asia if they make you happy, because I don't want to feel that way. And I do not want to get rid of all my hydrangeas that make me happy. So no guilt, no preaching, just information that's going to help us take care of our homes better, including that big round home, the one that they call Earth. The plant of the week is so simple, it's an oak, because Doug Tallamy's latest book is called The Nature of Oaks, and he's the best one to tell us about how wonderful they are. Oh, but I do want to include that when he and I talk, we talk about two dwarf types of oaks, because a lot of people say, I can't possibly grow an oak. I have too small a yard. In this interview with him, he talks about a great way to grow a regular, normal, very large oak in a very small way. Also, by the way, if you're like me and not like in the beginning of your life, really doesn't matter if you think that yard is going to shade out your house, because you won't be around. Anyway, there are two types of dwarf oaks that I want to talk about, and one of them is the Quercus virginiana type, but it's actually Quercus minima. It's a dwarf live oak, so it's a deciduous, it's actually a shrub. It wouldn't get any taller than 3 feet tall, but it would host, it grows acorns, and it would host all these wonderful bugs that we're about to talk about in the interview with Doug Tallamy. I don't think it's actually readily available to find in a nursery, but as Doug points out, the nursery business is driven by shoppers. And if you're a shopper and if you go asking, hey, do you or would you carry something called Quercus minima? It's a very tiny shrub oak. They might start to. So the power rests in your hands. There's that one. And there's also the chinkapin dwarf oak, which doesn't get more than, say, 15 feet high. So just to let you know, there are opportunities to grow oaks even if you have a tiny, tiny yard. This is Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA, kindly delivered by Dos Amigos Landscaping. Coming up, we'll be talking with Doug Tallamy about the nature of oaks. Welcome back to Into the Garden with Leslie, broadcasting on News Radio WINA. I'm Leslie Harris, and we're talking with Doug Tallamy about his latest book, The Nature of Oaks. Doug will be giving a webinar on Thursday, June 3rd at 7 p.m. that's available to anybody. And you can sign up at the PiedmontMasterGardeners.org website if you go to the events part of it. So welcome, Doug. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, tell us about this this webinar that you'll be doing for the Piedmont Master Gardeners.
Well, it will be about the book, The Nature of Oaks, and that's what I entitle it. And it's designed to accomplish exactly what the book is designed to accomplish, to familiarize people with all the things that are happening on oak trees. I want people to stop looking at them as just trees and think of them as homes or entire communities of organisms. Realizing that if you put that tree in your yard, you're creating, it's like a giant apartment complex for all kinds of things that can live there as well. And, you know, relating to the very first book I wrote, Nature, or Bringing Nature Home, that's how you bring nature home. You put the plants that support nature right in your yard.
Yes.
And then you get to interact with it. And
exactly.
You can do that for the next 900 years. That's how long oaks live.
There was a great photograph of my grandson. He lives up in Connecticut. My son had taken him to one that's 500 years old in Bedford. I was so excited.
Oh, the Bedford oak. Yeah, it's in the book. It's in the book.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I did listen to the book, but I must have, I don't know, daydreaming at that point. I liked the parts of the book where you talked about, you addressed all the possible concerns that people might have about putting something so mammoth in their yard, from starting with an acorn to dwarf species. Tell us about that.
Yeah, they're I call them landscaping myths. And, you know, myths are often based on things that could actually happen. And there are a number of them. One of them is oaks are too big. I can't use it on a small property. Well, there actually, I've got lots of examples of large oaks on small properties, but I do understand that. And you can get around that by planting a small oak. There are dwarf oaks, no matter where you live, more species in the West than in the East. But in the East, we've got dwarf chinkapin oak and dwarf chestnut oak. Down South, there's dwarf live oak. So the great big live oaks that are, you know, you see draping Spanish moss in Mississippi, there's actually a dwarf version of that.
Ooh. Do you know the specs on that? How big that would get? Do you know, happen to know?
No.
Well, I will look that up.
Well, look at listeners. Dwarf. How dwarf is dwarf? Yeah, I don't. I do know that dwarf chestnut oak will produce acorns when it's 5 feet tall. I've got one in my yard and they're small.
That's
so
awesome.
So they can, you know, people say, we can't use them as a street tree. Yes, you can. We have to get more of these into the marketplace to make it easier to get. But the market drives the marketplace. If people keep asking for these things, it's easy to propagate oaks. It's easy to sell them. There's a conflict. They transplant best when they're young, when you don't have to root prune them. They shouldn't be grown in pots. They should be really sold very young. And of course, that means you can't charge $3,000. And that's what the nurserymen want to do. So they want to sell you a 15-foot tree, which is more than most people can afford or want to spend on an oak. And it also has it's a high chance that it won't survive at all because it has to be root pruned so much in order to transplant it. So I encourage planting small. There's another option to get small oaks in your yard, and that is to actually coppice them. So you plant an oak, you wait till it does get 15, 20 feet tall, and then cut it down to the base, and it will grow up as a coppice. It turns into a bush. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. People used to coppice plants all the time and use the material for, you know, basket weaving and all kinds of things. But you can turn an oak tree into an oak bush and fit it into almost any landscape that way.
And so I have a question about that. You've cut down your oak tree. You said it. You should let it get to about 15 feet tall?
Well, about 3 or 4 inch diameter.
Okay.
In the trunk.
So you cut it down and from there it's going to bush out. What is it? You know, the reason that oaks are so important is that they attract all these Lepidoptera. What is it that attracts it? Is it mostly the foliage, and therefore having a coppice one, you could possibly even attract more per square foot?
Oh, per square foot, possibly, but you get a lot of square feet out of a mature tree. So yes, it's entirely the foliage. It's the chemistry, the leaf chemistry that insects adapt to. So all of the caterpillars that eat oaks are adapted to eating oaks and tolerating the tannins and the lignins that are in the leaves. And it does support more species of particularly caterpillars than any other plant genus in the country. 952 we're up to at this point.
952. And I was so excited about some river birches that I put into my yard a couple months ago, because that's, but that's only in the 400s. I'm not.
Yeah, laughing. That's good too, though. They're every tree can't be the best. Only one can be the best.
And so what is it that makes the oak the best? Besides, okay, so we know it's winning the bug award, but do you know, you've done the science to understand why it's not the oak?
There are four awards that I give out. Yeah. One is the food web award, creating the bugs that run the food web. But another one is sequestering carbon, pulling carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, locking it up in the plant tissues, holding it as long as that plant is alive, which in terms of oaks, that's hundreds of years. But the most important thing is pumping the extra carbon that they pull out of the atmosphere into the soil. Our soils are brown or black because of the carbon that plant roots deposit there. And you know, a large oak has enormous root systems, so they're doing that more than any other plant. Another award would be managing the watershed. Everybody lives on a watershed. Nobody has the ethical right to destroy that watershed, because what you do in your property does impact everybody else. And of course, the giant lawn does exactly that. It's the worst thing you can do for the watershed. So the oak is the opposite. It's with those big roots and with the canopy it softens the pounding rain so that the soil doesn't get compacted. Then the leaves fall. If you keep all those leaves on your property, that's absorbing water. It's protecting the soil community. Keeping the soil moist and full of carbon. And all of that protects the watershed, keeping that water from running off during storms. And then the fourth thing that every landscape has to do is support pollinators. And this is where oaks do not win the award, because they're wind pollinated. So, but you know, winning three out of four awards, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well done, Oak. This is Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA. This show is made possible by Dos Amigos Landscaping, and we're talking with Doug Tallamy about his latest book, The Nature of Oaks, and how important they are. One of the many things that I liked about the book was it really, actually, let me just digress and say one of the many things I like about you is that when I read your books, and I've read them all, I don't feel guilty. And sometimes when it's the native plant thing, I do feel guilty because I have an unfortunate penchant for plants native to Asia. I just love my
You are not alone.
I know. It's so sad and pathetic. Thank God for the Annabelle hydrangea and, you know, oak leaf and stuff, because I just love hydrangeas. But anyway, this makes me feel better. And your message is always so clear and yet not preachy. And so I really like the facts that you put down. And one of them that I really thought you did clearly in this latest book was to talk about the leaf litter and what should be underneath not only your oaks, but any of your trees. And it shouldn't be mown lawn. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is something we're just starting to think about. You know, we've got insect decline globally. Insects are fewer all the time. And as E.O. Wilson says, they're the little things that run the world. So we totally depend on them. We've already lost, some estimates are 45% of the insect populations globally. So this is not good. We've got to turn this around. So we're looking at all the reasons insects are declining. And one of them is light pollution at night. You know, light pollution takes a tremendous toll on insects. So turn out your lights. That's easy to do. But another important one, I think, you can't read about it in the literature yet because we're just starting to look at it, is that when you look at the caterpillars that drive the food web. And when I say that, I say that because caterpillars transfer more energy from plants, that energy that plants have captured from the sun. Well, they transfer that energy in the form of food to other animals more than any other creature on the planet. So let's just say caterpillars are driving the terrestrial food webs. Well, those caterpillars develop as caterpillars on the leaves of our plants. So if we're talking about oaks, they're up there eating the oak leaves, and then they finish growing. A few of them will spin a cocoon and live on, you know, emerge as an adult on the tree. Everything happens on the tree. But 94% of them drop off the tree, and then they wiggle beneath the ground and pupate underground, or they spin a cocoon in the leaf litter that's under the tree. And if you think about the way we treat the area under our trees, there is no leaf litter. We rake it all up. We've got lawn right up to the tree, or cement. And we mow and compact the soil, particularly in the summertime, to the point where it's hard as a rock and the caterpillars cannot get underground. So we're going to measure it this summer, but it really looks like the caterpillars drop down and die. And that is not going, you can plant that powerful plant, but if you don't allow the caterpillars to complete their life cycle and turn into the moths and the butterflies that drive the food web, you don't have the food web. So we're going to look at different ways that you can keep the soil moist enough and loose enough, uncompacted, so that the caterpillars can wiggle their way underneath there. And one of them is to have a bed of leaf litter under the tree. That's the best way to convert lawn to a planting bed, is just leave the leaves there. Then you can plant right through it. So leaf litter on the ground, or a ground cover of wild ginger or ferns or mayapple or foam flower. There's so many different ground covers you can use. And then shrubs, you know, your native viburnums, your native azaleas, witch hazel, there's all kinds of options. And if you have a big oak, you can have a dogwood on top of that. You can have a layered landscape, but all of that makes for very high caterpillar survivorship when they drop down. They're in a safe site. Nothing's going to be able to squish them. And of course the soil underneath that tree is then very loose, and it's easy for those, and there's a lot of leaf litter there, so it's easy for the caterpillars to do what they need to do to complete their development.
I love that part of it, because it's I know that if you have a tiny yard, even you with your tiny yard could have this back corner where it's just, yeah, nothing's going on there except for leaf litter and some understory native plants. And this is just my little swing set for the caterpillars of the tree.
Right.
And they
right.
can come down. And it's less work for me once I get those plants established.
Well, it's an excellent way to reduce the area you have in lawn. I'm encouraging people to cut their lawn in half. And people say, well, how do I do that? Easiest way is make more flower beds. And the place to put them is around your trees. Your trees will love it. They don't want grass right up to it. And it completes the nutrient cycle. So those leaves that fall then are broken down by all, we call them detritivores, all the creatures that live in the soil, and return the nutrients that was in that leaf to the soil so the roots can take it up again, and around it goes. You never have to fertilize if you keep all of that material on your property.
Yeah, it makes such good sense. This is Into the Garden with Leslie, and we're talking with Doug Tallamy about his latest book, The Nature of Oaks. We're on News Radio WINA. This show is sponsored by Dos Amigos Landscaping. By the way, Doug will be giving a webinar on Thursday, June 3rd at 7 p.m., and anybody can sign up for it. And you go to PiedmontMasterGardeners.org, and you go to the events page. We were talking about leaving leaf litter under oaks, and I know that some people would respond to that by saying, but it looks messy. And I have the... My poor listeners, all I ever talk about is the fact that my garden was on the Historic Garden Week tour a couple of weeks ago. But I have the back third of my yard is woodland, and I do leave leaves, but I kind of cheated. And here's how it looked pretty darn good that day. I wanted it to be tidy because people pay tickets for an interesting and tidy garden. And yet under those, I have very large tulip poplars and some oaks too. And then a lot of, unfortunately, Asian plants, but some good, I'm getting there in terms of native. But what I did was I lined the paths with that mulch, which isn't great to throw around just all the time, you know, the double shredded hardwood bark, which isn't great for those caterpillars. And yet it made a neat edge, and I still had all that leaf litter. So just an idea for some people who are into the neat.
Well, you can also hide those leaves with those ground covers, things like wild ginger. I mean, that is a complete ground cover. You cannot see the ground when that's doing well, but there are little leaves underneath there. So you know, if you think leaf litter is messy, you can cover it up. That's all,
yeah,
I'm trying to say.
It's a great plant. Yeah, I think that's great. So your first book was called Bringing Nature Home. Your second book really has spurred, which is Nature's Best Hope, really has spurred a sort of a, well, it's literally a homegrown national park. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I can. It was actually several years ago that I had run across the statistic of how much area we have in lawn. In 2005, a woman, I think her last name is Melissi, did a study measuring the amount of area we have in lawn. And in 2005, it was over 40 million acres. And you know, it hasn't gotten smaller since then. Well, that's an area bigger than the size of New England. And this is where I got the idea. Well, what if we cut that area in half? If everybody cut the area of lawn in half in their yard and started planting, putting in productive plants, you know, what would that mean? So I started to convert that would be 20 million acres that we could use for conservation. And I said, well, gee, we could create a new park right at home. it could be a new national park. We'll call it Homegrown National Park. And how big would Homegrown National Park be? So I started adding up the size of all the big parks in the country, Yellowstone, Yosemite, and the Adirondacks and the Great Smoky Mountains, you know, a whole big long list of them, Denali, which is huge. And there, you add them all up and it's still less than 20 million acres. So Homegrown National Park would be the biggest national park in the country. And of course, the difference is it will be kind of scattered all over the place. But if everybody does, it won't be scattered at all. It will be everywhere, which is, of course, the goal. So I guess it was a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was giving a talk somewhere, and there was a woman in the audience, Michelle Alfandari, who said, you really have to get this message beyond the choir. Everybody who comes to your talk is already in the choir. I said, I know. I've been doing that for 10 years. I know. She said, we need to create a website. And I've heard this before, and which is just not my thing. You know, she said, create a website and make it fun and everybody will want to go there. And I said, you do it. And she said, okay. She said, but I'm not going to do it alone. So she calls herself co-founder of homegrownnationalpark.org. But, you know, so the idea of the concept was mine. Everything else is hers, including the idea of getting on the map where you have a map of the U.S. and you can put in your data, which is where you live and the amount of area that you're going to convert to native plants. And that will then we can watch this add up. It's like one of those fundraising thermometers in the middle of the town. You can see as we get closer and closer to 20 million acres that people have converted. That's the idea anyway. But we've got over 20,000 acres at this point. It's way short of 20 million, but there's over 7,000 people on the map, and the idea is to get people who never thought about this, never thought about the fact that they actually can be important in conservation, that their little piece of the world is a part of the earth, and that they can, you know, they have control over it. They can shrink that lawn. They can get rid of their invasive plants. They can put in a pollinator garden. They can use what I call keystone species, and the oak is the best keystone species that's out there. Those are all really important conservation measures that everybody can do right at home. And if everybody does do it, we've got our Homegrown National Park.
I think it's such a wonderful concept. And I am going to look up, the website is homegrownnationalpark.org.
.org.
Okay, great. I'm going to get on there because I have my, you know, I'm really trying to change my landscape just right here.
You know, that's all we're asking. That's all we're asking.
Yeah, it's not like go and rip out everything. It's just like the next time you buy a plant, let's have a native, you know?
It's free. There's no, doesn't cost anything. And people say, are you using our data? No, we're not using your data. I wouldn't even know how to do that. And use it for what?
Yeah.
Yes,
this whole message is just so, you know, so simple. And it's so kind of you to take your time. I mean, I know, you know, you're an entomologist at the University of Delaware. You didn't start out by doing this. You just had this message for us, you know, having bought that big empty lot in where, outside of Philadelphia, correct? Or Delaware?
No, it's an hour south of Philly, yeah, in Oxford, yeah. Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just, you know, clear the land, and all of a sudden all these invasive species came, and then you realize, oh, oaks are different. I just think it's such a cool story. And I'm so glad you're spreading the word. This is Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA, brought to you by Dos Amigos. And next, we'll be talking about what to do in your garden right now and what to listen to while you are out there. We call this the playlist because it's always a great time to play in the garden. Welcome back to Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA. And now it's time for the playlist, which is weekly practical information on what to do in your garden right now and maybe what to listen to while you're out there playing in your yard. If the sound of the bugs in your oak trees, fingers crossed, is not keeping you happy. That was a great interview. I just find him to be a very inspiring guy. And we briefly mentioned Doug Tallamy's other book. So his latest is The Nature of Oaks, and that's the webinar that the Piedmont Master Gardeners are offering on November 3rd that you could sign up for on their website, Piedmont Master Gardeners, and then go to events. His first one that he wrote by himself was called Bringing Nature Home. And that's the one I read years ago when I just, you know, started my very primitive understanding of why this was so important. And then Nature's Best Hope is the one where, you know, he mentioned that somebody took this and made a website out of it. And there's actually, you know, a growing membership, a growing park. I mean, literally
I mean, I guess I could go there. Maybe I will, and just say, okay, you know, I have a lot of oaks and I'm growing a lot of native things. And my goal is to grow more and more all the time. So I could become part of that. And I think any of you could. Doug Tallamy co-wrote with Rick Dark, The Living Landscape, and how to make all those things that you want to make it, you know, beautiful garden or a functioning space, you know, privacy, you know, play place for the kids, all those things that you want, but it's while you foster nature and animals with native plants. Questions from listeners. Last week when I was chatting with my sister Sue Ann, and we had that really simple idea of, well, let's, you know, she's taking up real estate with hostas because they're so simple and easy to divide. She's like, okay, I don't know what I'm actually going to do there yet, but I know that if I put hostas in, I won't have weeds. And I said, ooh, good idea. That's what I did at first, but I am slowly substituting with ferns. And we talked about the Christmas fern and the autumn fern, both of which are native. And then I just did a little quick Google search to find out which other ones are. There are quite a bunch of other ones and some great ones that that I think a lot of people would recognize that are really good looking are the cinnamon fern, the royal fern, which is a very large one, the sensitive fern, and the maidenhair fern, which is, that's a tough one to keep alive because it really likes moisture. It looks exotic. It looks beautiful. I love the maidenhair fern. So that's a tip for me and maybe for you to just say, okay, I'm going to have a whole lot of these beautiful ferns and I'm going to keep my very favorite hosta to poke out of the middle of them, but it's not going to be a bunch of hostas with one fern. You know what I mean? This little drought that we're going through, well, as I record this on Monday, I'm hoping for big rain tonight, but even if we have that rain, it's not going to solve it. Keep watering, but hopefully we'll come out of this drought and try to keep your eye on your most stressed plants. Hopefully not all of your plants are stressed. I should do probably a show based on irrigation, but in a nutshell, I think that irrigation systems are sort of evil and terrible. I would never want to have one in my own garden because, of course, I would forget where it was and then I would cut the line and then I would say words that you can't say on a podcast. So I definitely prefer to plant plants that don't need an irrigation system, but all plants that are new need water, especially a bunch of annuals that I just put in the ground. And so don't forget that sprinkling helps, but you have to sprinkle for hours in order to emulate an inch of rain. If you have some things that are stressed or new, just getting that hose and sticking it right at the base of that plant and counting to 10 or 15 or 20, depending on how big the plant is going to do the job much more efficiently with no evaporation and really good direct contact to where you want that water to go. Here is a great tip. So I hopped on Doug Tallamy's Instagram account, which is not him at all. It's actually, I don't know if he gets on it, but anyway, it's the homegrown national park sort of thing. And he gets on it in that he gives information and tips and how-tos on how to make your garden more ecologically friendly. Well, if you're like me, you sort of were excited about seeing a truck go by in your neighborhood that said that it could kill all the mosquitoes in your yard. That definitely got my attention a few summers ago when I hosted a family reunion and we wanted to be outside. Well, I did it for that party and I guess, I don't know, I think it really helped, but I will never do it again, I hope, because it just, you know, it occurred to me there is no chemical that only kills mosquitoes. But here's something even more to think about. If that sprayer comes and kills mosquitoes and God knows what else in your yard, it's only killing like a few of them and they're already alive and they're already adults and they could already have stung you. They might be close to dying anyway. Those aren't the guys you want to kill. Here's an incredibly effective way from Doug Tallamy of how to reduce the mosquito population in your yard. You get one of those 5-gallon plastic buckets and you fill it with water and you get some straw or hay to ferment in there. It's like, you know, a handful or two and you stick it in there, leave it in there for, I don't know, two or three days. That will become the most wonderful, attractive place for mosquitoes to lay their eggs. And so now we're not talking about a few mosquitoes flying through the air that those spray guys might be able to kill. We're talking about the next generation of mosquitoes. And I really don't know the lifespan of a mosquito, but I don't think it's all that long. So if you were to get the current adult mosquitoes to lay their eggs in your bucket with your hay or your straw, and then you get one of those very inexpensive and very kind to the earth things called mosquito dunks that some people buy for their ponds and just put it right there. All those little baby bugs are going to die and it's not going to hurt anything else. So there's your tip for mosquitoes. They are beginning to bite a little bit. What to listen to this week in your garden, I think that what you should do is just go to the webinar that will have you listening to more of Doug Tallamy, and that is what you should listen to. It's on June 3rd at 7 p.m., and where you're going to go is piedmontmastergardeners.org/events. It only costs $15, and if you don't do that, if you don't want to sit down at 7 o'clock in the evening and listen to Doug Tallamy, how about you follow him on Instagram and get some more tips? How about you go to that website, Homegrown National Park? How about you listen to one of his books on Audible? I'm about to get the one that I just talked about, The Living Landscape, because it is now my goal to slowly start to get rid of my exotics and only keep my very, very favorite ones and start to have a beautiful yard with native plants. That's my goal. This was fun. If you have any questions or comments or corrections, please reach out to me on Instagram. I am Leslie Harris, LH, or you can email me lharris@lhgardens.com. I want to thank our sponsor, Dos Amigos Landscaping, for providing me this time to talk. I named the show Into the Garden with Leslie because I am really into my garden and I want to get you into yours. See you next week.